Okay, I'm ready to go. Hey everyone, welcome to Garden Fork Radio. Thanks for taking the time to listen to us. Thanks for downloading the show. New listeners, it's the most eclectic DIY show you've ever heard. And regular listeners, welcome back. And let me turn off my phone.
Well, I'll turn mine off while I'm at it.
Yeah. I don't know if you listened to the previous show, but that was kind of a long one. It was the audio version of my latest YouTube live stream, which I listened to as a podcast, and I'm like, this is bouncing all over the place because I was responding to people's comments, and I should have read the comments, I guess. So if that was painful for you, I'm sorry. This is a more, well, it's a different kind of pain. We're talking with Rick.
Good morning, my friend. How are you?
I'm good. I have a friend who wants to be nameless, but he has he's a market farmer, and he listens to us. And he had some interesting insights on Rick.
Yeah, is he still in business? I mean, if he's been listening to us.
Well, he just has to pass the time while he's picking weeds and stuff. He's got some pretty interesting stuff going on. But
what are his interesting insights on Rick?
I have to tell you off radio here. So.
Oh, that okay. Good.
Might have to refer you to some help. No, but today we're going to be talking about the new Firefox browser, my interesting Instagram problem, some vegetables that are healthier when cooked, and Aaron, the impatient gardener's raised beds, and a typewritten viewer mail letter.
Okay.
So, Rick, you want to start? You sent me an article about Firefox, and then I read a follow-up article.
Yeah, I'm beginning to... You know, Firefox was the browser for a long time, and then it kind of fell by the wayside. But in this age of privacy concerns and anonymous and tracking and all the things that are going on, Firefox, which is an independent
nonprofit,
and I contribute to them every year, are developing probably one of the best browsers around. It's light as far as the resources it uses on your computer. It's very protective. And the most important thing is, go ahead.
It has it's a plugin, but you can turn on a great privacy feature that puts Facebook in a box.
Kind of a sandbox, yeah.
Right. So normally Facebook can track your browsing activities even outside its social media site by using trackers planted on other websites like web cookies, which Garden Fork does not do. It's called pinging. No, it's called, I can't remember what it's called.
What they are is they're called the Facebook pixel, and it's just a single pixel on a picture or on a website that contains enough information, that gathers enough information that Facebook can track you everywhere you go.
Right. So if there's one of those little things on the page that says follow me on Facebook, it's possible it has a pixel. It depends on if they're trying to sell you something, it does have a Facebook pixel.
Right.
But it says normally with Mozilla's extension, when you open Facebook on a browser tab, it isolates your Facebook identity into its own container, making it difficult for the social network to follow you outside its site. I also, when I'm looking at Facebook, I close Firefox, I restart it fresh, I have a private window open, and it's only Facebook. I don't have any other browser windows open.
Right.
So, and then when I'm done with Facebook, I close it. But with this new extension, I'm very happy about that.
Yeah, I'm very thrilled that Firefox is taking the initiative and trying to make web browsing a lot safer and less intrusive for all of us.
The Electronic Frontier Foundation, Cooper Quinton, is a security researcher there. He says, Firefox seemed to have positioned itself as a privacy-friendly browser, and they have been doing a fantastic job improving security as well. On the other hand, Google, which has Chrome, Google is fundamentally an advertising company, so it's unlikely that they will ever have a business interest in making Chrome more privacy-friendly. But then Google said privacy and security went hand in hand, and it led the industry on both fronts. So, read into that what you want.
Yeah, they kind of horse race back and forth along there. Some nice things, though, I've read recently about Google is they have been integrating the inventory, electronic inventory, for stores all over the country. And if you search for an item now on Google, it will tell you if it's in a store that's near you and how much, how many they have left and that kind of thing. A brick and mortar store. So if you're interested in trying to help your brick and mortar people survive and deal with local people, this is a good way to kind of at least balance out that impulse to go to Amazon, which I'm just regular orders that come in now. So, I don't even have to order them. They just show up. If you're interested in supporting your local merchants, and we all really should be, then, that's something else to look at before you immediately jump onto Amazon.
There you go. Yeah, it's conflicting for me because actually the Amazon revenue that we get is substantial for Garden Fork, but then there's also that part of me that I try and go to local stores as much as possible.
So, did I just torpedo you? I'm sorry.
No, not at all. In Brooklyn here, and I actually see it in the suburbs when I go traveling, there are lots of empty storefronts in the strip malls.
Yeah. I didn't mean to torpedo your business there, but
the business model of Garden Fork is tilting more and more toward listener support, much like a PBS or NPR model. And
sure, that's done through the link to Patreon.
Yeah, a couple of people have signed up lately. One, a pretty big dollar amount. I was kind of stunned by that, but they just said, "I like what you're doing."
Yeah, you know, and this is the problem with everyone that's in the creative business that are trying to use the web to at least break even and, you know, buy equipment and make the time worthwhile.
Rick is paying my mortgage, by the way, so thank you. All right, let's move on. So,
okay. Do you know what I did find on Amazon, though, that I thought was just amazing because I've been looking for them? Everyone knows I've had cataract surgery, both eyes, and I'm 20/15 in both eyes. That's amazing, really. He doesn't see that very often, my ophthalmologist. But the depth of field begins at about 10 feet away from me. So it's 10 feet to infinity. I have 20/15. Between 10 feet and myself, it's really blurry. And so lately, to counteract that, I've been carrying like three pairs of bifocals, a 1.5, a 3.5, and maybe a 2 or something. And switching, you know, sometimes I have all three on the top of my head, switching back and forth, trying, you know, depending on what I'm doing. But now you can buy, without a prescription, graduated bifocals. What are the progressive bifocals on Amazon? And I got some that were clear on the top and 2.5 on the bottom. And so when I look up, I can see clearly. And then when I look down at the computer or the dashboard or when I'm reading, I can see clearly as well just by kind of moving my head a little bit. It really works out. And they have been just, I imagine for like beekeepers, I had taken out I got two pairs of the same lens, but different visions, different strengths. And I'd taken the lenses on the left side out and swapped them. So on one side, it was 1.5. On the other side, it was like 5 or 6 or something, fairly very close magnification for when I'm under the hood. Yep. So I can look over the top of the glasses normally. And then when I need to inspect deep inside the cells and look for the egg or something, I could use that 5x magnification to look in there. But this with the progressives are really useful, and they're only like say $25 or so, which is a real deal. And they help with my driving because the dashboard was out of focus when I was driving. I could see real well, but I'd have to put on my readers to look at the dashboard. Oh, but now I can look at that. I can look at Waze, and everything works the way it should. So if you're like me and you're worried about vision problems, you might want to give these a look and give them a try.
I was pulling nails out of a tin ceiling the other day, and the tin ceiling's been painted, 15 times, and trying to find the nail heads. And they were just, I couldn't see them. I was like, because I was just too close, and my glasses weren't strong enough. So I was just like, okay. So I kind of stood back a bit so I could see the nail heads. I was,
they can get you a prescription, almost anything you want. In the Navy, with aircraft mechanics that were somewhat older, or people inspecting work, we actually cut bifocals that were on the top of the glasses. So when you were looking up underneath the aircraft, you could see what you were doing.
Oh, that's good to have when you're working on aircraft. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, or even, nails above your head, anything that's above your head.
So, last month and this month, I got this text message from my evil cell phone provider saying that I had gone over my cellular data rate. And I'm like, what's with that? And last month, my buddy's kid had to use my cellular hotspot. And I was like, well, he probably just watched a ton of videos and ruined my data rate. And then this month I got the same warning. I'm like, you're over. And so I went to the company's website. You can look at your profile, and it actually broke down for me the data over the month and what it was being used for. And the most it was being used for was social media tools. And I'm like, social media tools? And I realized, since I installed a VPN on my phone, I wasn't using a burner anymore for Instagram, my old broken phone. And I put Instagram on the regular phone, and I didn't turn off use cellular data for Instagram. And so it was constantly updating and constantly downloading new pictures in the background.
Oh, yeah.
And it pulled like 4 gigs over the month. So I just, with a simple swipe, you can, in the settings, the Apple operating system settings for your phone, turn off cellular data on a app by app basis. And I turned off background refresh and cellular data. So, and I will remind myself just to use it on Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
But that cost me some money, those overages.
There's something else in the Apple iOS operating system, and I forget exactly where it is, but it uses, it connects to Wi-Fi to boost your cell phone signal. So it kind of combines both of them, and it will just begin pulling Wi-Fi signals from nearby places to help boost your signal. And I forget what it's called, but it's worth looking up. You should turn that off as well.
Oh, turn it off or turn it on?
No, turn it off. You don't want it because it burns up your, that it's good for, in the case of pricing for your cellular business, but it's bad for battery life.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because it's very busy, and it works really hard at finding those places, and so it uses a ton of battery life.
All right. So let's pivot 180 degrees and talk about vegetables.
Oh, I tell you, I love vegetables. How's your garden looking this year?
A couple of setbacks, but my kale was almost completely devastated by some munching thing, and so I posted pictures on our Facebook discussion group, and people said it was either the cabbage loper or slugs. And I put out slug bait traps and got almost nothing. And so I think it's the cabbage loper. And I went nuclear fairly quickly and put some neem spray. But I only sprayed the kale itself. I didn't spray the ground or anything. I just sprayed the kale with the neem. So.
Right. Well, yeah, Thomas Jefferson said, one of the marvels of gardening is that, what you lose on one side, one season, you almost always gain on the other side. So if you have bad kale one year, you might have great tomatoes to kind of make up for it. And then the next year you might have really great cabbages and bad tomatoes. So it all, if you grow enough, it all kind of evens out year to year. And I like that idea.
The yin and yang of Thomas Jefferson.
That's it. But anyway, Consumers Report, by the way, Eric and I are both big supporters of Consumer Report. I'm sure you all know this. But they've been doing some great articles on healthy eating. I mean, all kinds of different foods and whatnot. Why you should eat the brachia as often as you can. Why the white vegetables are better, are as good for you as the green ones. All kinds of stuff. But this one is about vegetables that are that actually release more of the good stuff that you need for in whatever form when they're cooked than when you eat them raw. And some of them were kind of surprising to me.
Yeah, carrots.
Yeah, yeah. You can increase the concentration of carotenoids by 14% by boiling carrots whole. Don't slice them. And if you pan fry them, you can actually reduce that by 13%. That's so it's better to boil them. I'm not a big fan. I like raw carrots. I guess I'll just kind of keep on doing that. But I'm not a fan of cooked carrots, but it's, you know, they say with a little bit of honey on top or some maple syrup, there you go. You're in the honey and maple syrup.
Yeah, I'm in the sugar business. I wonder if steaming is the same as boiling, because I prefer to steam them rather than boil them. But
It doesn't say here, but that's an interesting question. I think that it would be the same, maybe even better.
Yeah, it says once they're cooked, they're easier to cut. Top with a tiny bit of honey or maple syrup to bring out the natural sweetness of carrots.
Well, you know, the next thing is mushrooms. And mushrooms soak up fat. Boy, don't you see that in the pan when when you're doing that. But you get a flavor boost, and also it brings up a lot of antioxidants when you fry mushrooms.
I never think that mushrooms have anything anyway. I just think they're kind of a they have a meaty flavor that I like. I never think of them from a nutrition standpoint.
Yeah, you just kind of think of them as something that's there.
Immune boosting. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, go ahead. I was going to say, you know, the only mushrooms I know about that do anything else are like the psilocybin mushrooms.
Right.
But you know, this is interesting.
This is spinach. Garden Fork, Rick. So.
I'm sorry. This is not the drug hour. Yeah.
Spinach.
Well, actually, sometime we should talk about the new research that's being done into the psychedelics. They're going back and actually finding a lot of great uses that they have been missing for depression, anxiety disorders.
And PTSD.
PTSD, all those things. Using them in relatively small amounts, the amounts they were initially supposed to be used at. And psychiatrists are even quite excited about having new drugs that they could possibly treat intractable depression with. Michael Pollan, who's one of Garden Fork's favorite authors, Botany of Desire, Omnivore's Dilemma, some of those books, has written a new book specifically about this topic, and I'm reading it now, and it's quite fascinating.
Cool.
Mm. Spinach. Says here, you know, you can increase the oxalate. I'm not very good with this. I'm not. She who must be obeyed is the nurse. I am not a nurse.
Oxalic acid.
There it goes. By 40%. By blanching your spinach, taking it, dipping it in boiling water for 1 minute, taking it out and putting it in an ice bath. And so that's good. And it's easy to do. Asparagus, you're reading this one?
Yeah. By the way, oxalic acid is what I use to knock down the varroa mite population in beehives now. So it is considered, I'm pretty sure it's considered an organic treatment for them. So anyway, but yeah, asparagus, yes.
Yeah. Asparagus, let me see. Antioxidants, cancer-fighting antioxidants by more than 16%. Essentially doing the same thing. Just dunk them whole into a pot of boiling water. When they turn bright green, toss them with lemon juice and olive oil, a little bit of fat, and you can increase them. And then here's my favorite, tomatoes. And I did not know this at all. You can increase vitamin C and antioxidants 62% by just baking your tomatoes at 200 degrees for 30 minutes and then sprinkling a little bit of, or sprinkling before you put them in with olive oil, balsamic vinegar, salt, pepper, that kind of thing. Bake them for a half hour at 200 degrees and serve them as a side dish or put them on sandwiches. And that's 62% in lycopene and the various chemicals that they're supposed to be good for you.
This is why I love ketchup.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's why I love canned tomatoes. You know, canned tomatoes, despite what people think, are actually superior tomatoes. They are taken from the vine at absolute point of ripeness. They're processed. They're heated. So this helps bring out the good stuff. And then they're canned for freshness. And so I have nothing against canned tomatoes when the fresh ones are not around.
Their peak, yeah, totally.
Yeah. Okay, what else is on our list?
Oh, I have to change windows here. I'm like deep into the consumer part. Oh, I did want to say one thing about the asparagus. There is, I don't know, it's a new way, but if you have a very narrow, round, tall, some sort of vessel to cook your asparagus, you can boil the bottom third and the top two thirds will steam. And you can use the whole length of the asparagus then, because the lower part is always tough. And the boiling will tenderize the bottom part of the cut stem of the asparagus. And the top two-thirds, you just get steamed anyway. And then you have more asparagus for your money.
I had no idea. You know, something else here. I was just looking at the more from Consumers Report at the bottom. There's an article here. Is watermelon good for you? The answer is yes. Are avocados good for you? The answer is yes. Do white vegetables have health benefits? Yes, yes, yes. And are cruciferous vegetables healthier than the other ones? And the answer to that as well is yes. So it's a great read this month, and it's worth the $25 or so they charge every year for the information. I know She Who Must Be Obeyed and I, we don't get wound up about, you know, running to stores and trying to compare and we got to replace a washer or dishwasher or something. We hit Consumers Report first, find out what the latest information is, what looks like the best, read the comments from other subscribers about their experience. Then we go shopping instead of doing it the other way around. It makes us less crazy.
Well, a less crazy you is a good thing, Rick.
Yeah, keep it up, friend.
All right. I don't know if you guys have been following Erin from The Impatient Gardener on Facebook or Instagram or on her website. Her website's really nice, by the way. But she has a multi-part series on building these mega raised vegetable beds in a way that the garden fork is just the polar opposite of.
I mean, this is not a just throwing something together. They planned this. They leveled a large area because I forget how many beds there are. There are five, six, something like that. Leveled a large area, put good drainage underneath it. This has been a months long endeavor. And then they used cedar 4x4s on the bottom because they were going to be in contact with the ground. Yeah. And then built up with pine 4x4s up to maybe 2 foot so they could sit on the side of the beds and reach across and not have to stoop or get down your knees. And it's a wonderful design. It sure has taken them a while, but they're even still married after this. So yeah, I think it's a pretty good deal.
They're all lined up. It's on level ground. Interesting thing, which I have yet to do, and I keep telling myself, my garden is on a slope, and the slope is pitched away from the arc of the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm told that I could warm up my beds faster and get more sunlight during the year if I made the beds, if I canted them so that the soil was more perpendicular to the sunlight. Does that make sense?
Sure, that makes sense.
So right now my beds, because they're just sitting, I don't really level my, I don't try too hard to level the beds. They kind of angle toward the shady part of the sky. And if I cut, essentially, I could cut wedges and, or I could just make the soil, I'm blanking on the words. But if I could point the soil more toward the sun, have more of a oblique angle or a right angle to the sun, I could increase my yield. And I'm curious about that. So.
Yeah, it wouldn't make too much difference this time of year, probably. But as the sun starts to drift south, and by the way, happy summer solstice, Midsummer Nights. But as the sun begins to drift south, you might be able to increase your season and get started earlier if you did tilt your bed just a little bit. And you don't have to do it physically. I mean, you can just put an extra board height on the back and on the ends, and then have the soil slope away.
Yep.
So that would work, although you got to be careful about losing your soil to heavy rains, that kind of thing.
Yeah, we haven't had that issue. Maybe my friend, the market gardener who listens to our podcast, could weigh in on this. I will see him at the farmer's market, and I will see.
I need to find out what he knows about me first, and then I'll let you know if his ideas are any good or not.
It's not what he knows, it's what he thinks he knows. It's his impression of your online persona.
I see. Ooh, well.
Speaking of your online persona, we got a typewritten viewer mail, and it wasn't even sent to me.
No, it came to the house here. It was from Martin J. He's a ham radio operator. W3 Papa Romeo. This is November Hotel 2 Foxtrot. I sent him a letter back by ARRL.net, the American Radio Relay League. .net, and probably overwhelmed him with all kinds of information, but it was good to know he's out there. He has, it looks like his dad actually had this call sign before he, before Martin inherited it. And he's a radio extra, amateur extra, which means that he can copy code speeds up to about 20 words a minute. And he prefers CW, which is what we call code, continuous wave. And I came up through the military as a Morse code intercept operator. And so we could probably have a good time chatting back and forth doing that. But anyway, thank you so much, Martin. He listens to the Garden Fork. He came to see about the Garden Tower project that he heard us talking about. And then he noticed on my website I was a ham radio operator, and he just wanted to say hi. So cool. 73 is my friend.
Oh, one thing, it's not on the list, but I just put out a video about determining if your car battery is dead or if the alternator is not functioning, and you had some feedback on that.
Yeah, your video was excellent, as always. And when I was policing, particularly with older cars, I jumped a lot of cars in my life doing that. And the older cars, lots of times I would jerk on the cables just to make sure they were attached well.
The battery and cables that are battery from cables. The engine to the battery.
Yeah. And about half the time they came loose in my hand. Acid will trickle down inside the insulation and begin wearing away at the copper. Mm-hmm. And eventually it reduces it so the car won't start. And that's particularly when they say, well, I got a new battery, but my car still won't start. You jerk on the cables and sure enough, they come apart in the middle. So it's always something to think about. The older your car gets, you can reap tremendous benefits from your electrical system just by replacing your cables every now and then.
And then also having quality jumper cables goes a long way.
Yeah, yeah. The if you're paying $10 for a set of jumper cables and an air inflator, you aren't buying quality equipment. And there is nothing like a great pair of jumper cables. If you're spending $25-$50, you're getting some great cables with huge conductors. Wire inside and quality clamps on the ends, and it's really worth paying for.
Mine are 8-gauge. The wire is 8-gauge copper stranded.
So that's nice. Big. Yeah, that's big.
But I carry them, and I've never had to jump my own car. I've because I'm about karma as boomerang and just helping. You know, I generally think everyone's good in the world, so I just, you know, it's kind of neat that you can tell when someone needs a jump. So, and it's funny, a couple times it's been that's a man and a woman, and the woman has come over and asked, you know, do you have any jumper cables? Because the guy is just too proud.
Yeah. You know, one of the interesting things, I jumped a car here a while back for a guy, And I backed up to his car. He says, you can't do that. I mean, yeah, the engine's on the other end of your car. What are you thinking? But what he didn't know is that in the Prius, the starter battery is actually in the back. And so there's a little hatch you pop and you connect to the starter battery and you jump them off that way.
That is so funny. I didn't even think about jumping a car with a Prius.
Yeah, yeah, you have to think about it because the starter battery is a completely different battery than the tractor battery, the main traction battery.
Right.
And so there's really no way you can tie into that traction battery. But the starter battery, which keeps everything charged, keeps the lights on, keeps holds your settings on the radio and in all the computers in the Prius, is in the back. And so that's where you jump from.
Who knew? Wow. So, okay, a lot we've covered here. If you all have some thoughts, you can typewrite us a letter. The address is Box 130, Colebrook, Connecticut, 06021, if you want. Or just send us an email. It's radio@gardenfork.tv. That's radio@gardenfork.tv. So,
you know, somebody else sent us some email. Let me look here real quick.
Okay. I'll fill some time. Coming up is a video about the LED grow light rig I made. Our executive producer, Jimmy, was like, what's with the video you keep talking about? And I'm like, so I finally, what happened was I deleted half the footage by accident. So I made an interesting beginning to it and I'm editing that today and I hope to have it up. It'll probably be up even before this podcast is up. So, I always struggle with the music. I've really found that if you lay a little bit of music under video, it just is more impactful and engaging. So rather than just a linear DIY, I shot some slow motion welding footage with this one. So we'll see.
Okay. You know, I can't find the letter right now, but I think her name was Jean, and she sent you the message. You sent it on to me. Wanted to know if I had actually gotten a Roomba yet.
Oh, and yes.
Then, yeah. And then related that she had found one at a thrift store and paid very little money for it, brought it home. And all it needed was be cleaned out and add a new battery. And she got a new Roomba. I don't have one yet, but I'm still kind of thinking about it. You, on the other hand, own one.
Yeah. It's her. Nicole is her name.
Okay.
It says Roomba. Did Rick ever get one? I love mine. Got it off a local listserv because it was broken. Needed a new battery and a thorough cleaning. Had my $400 Roomba for 3 years. That is a Garden Fork story. Rehabbing a thrift store Roomba. That's from Nicole.
That's right.
I have it, and I really like it. I have older one, and it may have improved itself with thicker carpets. It just depends on the car. If your carpet lays nice and flat and it's thin, the Roomba will get up on it and clean it. We have one kind of decorative thin rug, and the corner always gets messed up on it. And I don't think it has enough rigidity to it. But for low pile carpet and wood floors and tile floors and linoleum and that, it's fantastic. And so you sometimes have to do a little touch-ups because it is a round object that doesn't get into square corners always very well. And I just hit that. I got a little portable vacuum. You can just, you know, get the dog hair in the corners. So.
And with two labs, you certainly need something to clean up all that shed.
Yeah, I'm going to Roomba actually after this because the one I have is kind of, the newer ones are quieter, but it does sound like a SUV robot clunking around in the room next to you.
I can imagine how my terriers would take to a Roomba.
Yeah, the Labradors get out of the way, but they, I just said
my terriers would attack it. I think they'd be having a wonderful time.
All right, everyone. So more for your money there. Another half hour of us talking and you are probably at your destination. So thank you all for listening. It's always great to hear from you too. radio@gardenfork.tv. Thank you.
Oh, sorry. Get out there and grow something. See you later, my friend.
Garden Fork Radio's executive producer is Jimmy Gutz of hollowbooks.com, and our music is licensed from uniquetracks.com.